Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Boston Pops and conductor Keith Lockhart celebrate the 75th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz with performances of the score to the beloved film alongside a screening on Friday, August 22nd at Tanglewood. The complete film will play above the Shed stage as the Boston Pops musicians perform If I Only Had a Brain, If I Were King of the Forest, and of course, the magical Academy Award-winning performance of Over the Rainbow. The Wizard of Oz was a technical marvel for the MGM studio in the late 1930s. MGM has now remastered the timeless classic, and in this version, produced by John Goberman, the brilliantly restored images are accompanied by the Boston Pops playing entirely new transcriptions of Harold Arlen's brilliant lost scores. To tell us more, we welcome Boston Pops conductor Keith Lockhart back to the roundtable. Good morning, Keith. How are you?
Great, Joe. How about yourself?
Wonderful. It is very nice to have you aboard the program. This is an exciting project. I know you've done this a few times at Symphony Hall in Boston. You're bringing it to Tanglewood. At what point did this start to be in the works of thinking that you could do this?
Well, we were approached. We've done quite a bit with John Goberman over the years, the producer of this particular property, and we were approached last year about doing it. We thought it was a brilliant idea. I mean, it was the 75th anniversary. It's this year, I believe, is its 75th anniversary. And, what a magical, timeless piece that really just unites pretty much every generation. I don't know about you, but I remember every couple of years it would come back to the movie theaters or it would show up on TV once a year and we'd all get to stay up late to watch it. That's back in those days before DVDs.
Right.
It's the score is just amazing. The film is so iconic, and to get the chance to be part of a live performance of it and to really let people hear this great score that you really can't hear if you listen to the existing soundtrack because of the kind of 30s muddle on it.
Many of us probably don't think in these terms, but when the film is playing and the orchestra is providing the music, how much rest time do you get, or is there music just pretty much throughout?
In certain movies, of course, there's a lot of time without much music going on. But in the case of The Wizard of Oz, the longest gap is maybe 2 minutes.
Wow.
So it's pretty much continual. And, of course, I don't know if people think about it this way either. It's a very tough assignment for the orchestra and for the conductor because what's left in on the movie soundtrack, of course, are the voices. So we are playing and Judy Garland is singing. But Judy Garland, being not of this earth anymore, can't adjust at all to us. So we have to hit all of the cues and the timings so that when we get to the right note in the music, she comes in with us. And it's quite a coordination thing. I have to say it's one of the more challenging things I've done in the last bit.
So what is the accoutrement on stage that makes that possible? You have a monitor, there are timings, and how is that different than a normal setup, let's say?
Well, I have a monitor that has running digital time and a big sweep second-hand analog clock in the corner of it. And all of it's done by cues in the score that say, when you hit this downbeat, you should be at 1 minute and 21 seconds. And so it's all about, so you're not pushing and pulling the orchestra all over the place. It's about kind of gradually moving things one way or the other so that they line up right at the points they need to line up. But like I said, it's certainly, I did 3 performances of it. I don't think I saw the movie at all because I was too busy coordinating it.
As I mentioned in the introduction, there are new transcriptions of Harold Arlen's lost scores. So give us a sense of how that came to be and what exactly that means.
Well, it's kind of amazing that something that was done as recently as 1939, none of that material exists, but there have been huge turnovers in the big Hollywood sound studios over the years. There was a big fire that destroyed a lot of MGM properties. All this stuff was just kept in warehouses and boxes, and a lot of it was considered filler and was used, I'm told, there's a rumor at least in the industry, that it was used to fill under the Hollywood freeway at one point or another. At any rate, many, many hundreds of films, the scores that were painstakingly written out, all hand-copied in those days, are gone. So if you want to recreate what the orchestra did, it involves very skilled composers, arrangers themselves, sitting down and listening over and over again to the same place in the music to hear what the orchestrators of the time did and rewriting it, which is, of course, a very labor-intensive sort of experience. But I'm grateful somebody did it because the score is marvelous, not just the parts that we know, but really some of the underscoring and the film music is just, it's really beautifully worked through.
And it makes you, obviously, I would think, because we are sitting in the audience, we're watching the movie, and also focused a bit on the orchestra, to be able to appreciate the music and appreciate the score by Harold Arlen.
It does. I think it gives you a whole new perspective. I mean, you know, when you watch a movie musical, of course, and the Wizard of Oz is so visually compelling that your eyes can't help but be drawn to the screen, but it really makes the music a lot more equal partner in the billing, because with a huge orchestra there, you really can't ignore the music, and there's a presence that, you know, is just so lost on the old soundtrack that it's amazing to hear this music, I think, this way. People who came to the shows here in Boston in May said that it really just opened their eyes to the Wizard of Oz in a whole new way.
I think one of the things also that should be mentioned is as you said, now with DVD, many people have seen it for the first time in that format or on television, but to see it on the big screen, and this is remastered, and while certainly scores can be lost, that print remains but has been restored and remastered, and it's really stunning.
It really is. The colors just pop. I mean, it's kind of the definition of Technicolor, and it just looks so much sharper than I remember seeing it. In fact, my funny story about it is that, most of my, I think actually that I was in my teens before I ever saw The Wizard of Oz in a movie theater. I always saw it every year, one time a year, it would be broadcast on network television. And my parents didn't have a color TV till I was in college. So I didn't realize that when Dorothy got to the Land of Oz, that everything went into Technicolor from black and white. I thought the whole thing was in black and white.
Yeah. Puts it in a whole new light, doesn't it?
Exactly.
And I remember the first time seeing it and just thinking, oh my God, those flying monkeys are the scariest thing I've ever seen in my very young life.
I did let my four-year-old come see it for that very reason. I figured he needed a couple more years before he could put up with the flying monkeys.
So when you're up there, and you alluded to this a moment ago, that you don't really get to enjoy or see the film because the orchestra is working so hard. Are there points where you can, if anything were perhaps to go wrong, that you can make it up?
Well, there have to be those points, obviously, because, the show must go on. But it's just really, it's one of those places, a big responsibility moment for the conductor where you can't let anything
right.
go wrong enough that you you need to make it up.
And does the orchestra have, I assume, different players at different times that you can get involved and sort of watch what's going on?
There are places, and we try to discourage that, because the problem is you start looking up at the screen, you get very excited about what you see on the screen, and then you forget to come in the next time. But the last time we did it, it was three performances, and by the third performance, people had figured out when they weren't needed for a while, and then you saw a lot of checking out going on.
We're, of course, talking about the Boston Pops at Tanglewood on Friday night, doing this Wizard of Oz performance, and summer is always a busy time for you. It's always a busy time for the Boston Pops, and not just Tanglewood. This is really travel time for all of you.
Well, we're around and about. We just had the Pops on Hyannis in Nantucket this last weekend. We're going back out to Tanglewood for this. We'll be out with Josh Groban again in your part of the world a week after that. And then it's kind of a low time. We're doing a few private engagements in Boston in September. But like most of you, this is the time when everybody heads off with their families in different directions.
And then your season begins again in late fall.
Yes, the holidays, beginning of December, we'll be pretty much solid for a month of holiday performances, mostly here in Boston, but getting out as far west as Worcester for people who want to come in a little bit.
And how is the season shaping up?
Great. I have to tell you, there's been very little planning on that so far. Lots of basic planning, but very little specific planning. I'm sure it's going to be a good one, and that's what we do in these off times when we're not actually doing concerts.
Now, see, when we talk to the BSO, they'll talk about, you know, planning months and years out. So I find it fascinating that you have a little more, it can be a little more immediate.
It's a little different. I mean, one of the things is that we like to not limit ourselves by programming 2 years in advance, because we try to do things that are, you know, if something comes out in the spring pop season that's a huge hit, like Let It Go from Frozen, for instance, we want to be able to commission an arrangement of that and put it into the program, and we wouldn't know that 2 years in advance. There is something, you know, it speaks to the difference between classical music program and the pops, which is a little bit more of the here and now and a little more immediate. That having been said, we do long-term planning that goes just as long as the BSOs. It's just that we don't actually put out those programs until a little closer.
Well, the Boston Pops and conductor Keith Lockhart will celebrate the 75th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz. The Oz with Orchestra program at Tanglewood takes place on Friday night at 8:30 in the Shed. More information can be found at tanglewood.org, tanglewood.org. Keith Lockhart, always a pleasure to have you join us. Thank you very much, and have a great time in Tanglewood.
Thanks a lot. See you out there.
Can't wait. Thank you. Again, Oz with Orchestra program at Tanglewood takes place Friday night at 8:30 in the Shed. More information can be found at tanglewood.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.